Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
We were all just young and stupid.
Hey, I think I'm still young and stupid.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 2, Airport Stuff. No, wait. Here we go again. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello.
Sounded like Twin Peaks, winning at slot machines. That show's great.
Oh, let's start so we can finish, shall we?
Yeah.
With our B plot, Kenny starts oozing into Valerie's heart and parts beyond. So Val puts on the world's ugliest bone-colored suit with a short-sleeve jacket. Sarah, do you want to tell the people how you described it in the visual aids?
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge your choice of the word bone instead of, for example, pale ecru or okay. eggshell.
Sure.
Because that's what's going to happen. I believe I described her as the activities director on a cruise for nursing students.
Correct, you did. It's
not good. There may be an epaulette.
No, but I think there are extraneous pockets. You will have to go to the visual aids to confirm our memory of this. Anyway.
There is also possibly the implication of a toe belonging to a camel. Who's to say?
Yeah, there's a reason that you hardly ever see her in pants, I think. And it's because, unlike the other girls, she has a bigger behind. Like, not to say she's fat at all. She just has a bigger butt. And they seem to have a hard time dressing her in things that aren't skirts, in my experience.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, she puts on this ensemble to go see Kenny, who muddies the waters of their relationship by bringing up Jim, saying they just talked and that Jim says Val is practically family. And before they even get down to their alleged business, he's asking her to play tennis with him and promising to solve her problems over vegetable juice. And after the match, they discuss how Kenny got so great at tennis. Turns out he learned from his wife, well, almost ex-wife, they're separated. He then belatedly remembers that he can get her the money for the Peach Pit after dark. She just needs to sign paperwork for an SBA loan. They'll do it tonight at an early dinner. Totally normal, above board stuff. Speaking of which, when Kenny comes in his fun aloha shirt and multi-pleated pants, need I say the shirt is tucked in? Of course I don't. Otherwise, how would you see the pleats? Except you would feel them, I'm sure, somewhere on the back of your neck. As a viewer, not whatever Val's going to feel, but she will somehow. Anyway, he comes to pick her up at the Walsh house for their date and comments on how much the house has changed since he was there last in clip 2.
Oh, really? When was that?
Back a few years ago when I joined the firm, Jim and Cindy had my ex-wife and I over for dinner.
You don't seem sure of that. Is she your wife or ex-wife?
It is a marriage in name only. As a matter of fact, she's on Martha's Vineyard right now for the summer, and when she gets back, we're going to finalize things.
Any kids?
Yeah. I have a son, 6.
That's great. Must be hard, though.
Hasn't been easy on any of us.
So what would your wife think about us going out to dinner?
She couldn't care less. She does her thing, I do mine.
Sounds very convincing. Totally above board, and I definitely wouldn't be Googling that.
Oh, certainly
Valerie.
Not.
Valerie.
He asks about the Walsh kids, and Val tells him what they're up to, including that Brandon is probably at the beach club with his friends, which we will get to. Hey, Kenny's been a member of the beach club for years. Wonder if that will come up later. Anyway, he also advises Val that she shouldn't leave her joints lying around the living room. She apologizes and says she hopes he's not offended, but he's cool, man. Didn't you see his shirt at Eclipse? because where else? Val asks Kenny why things didn't work out with his wife. It's an extremely interesting story you've definitely never heard before in clip three.
Well, Diane and I were college sweethearts. We were both very young and very inexperienced.
So are you saying you weren't in love?
No. We were in love. Like I said, we were just inexperienced.
And by that you mean?
I never sowed any wild oats and neither did she. Bottom line is we just lost the passion for each other. And I started looking at other women. And once that happens, you lose trust and everything falls apart.
Any regrets?
Yeah, a few. It's going to be difficult with my son and all.
Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, life goes on. Besides, I'm just learning how to live my life again.
I'm glad.
I bet he was putting it in his wife's belly button for like 2 years.
That's airport stuff.
That is definitely airport stuff.
Hi.
It's the Burbank of airport stuff.
Can we make a shirt that's less popular than Sex Out? If it is, I believe it's airport stuff.
Airport stuff, and then the plate is just shaped like a dildo. Sorry. Go ahead, Tara.
It's hard to believe that the Val that we've gotten to know is this inexperienced that she can't see what a bullshit story this is.
Yeah.
But she can't, because right after this, they kiss, and then Kenny is walking Val to the door. She'd invite him in, but she doesn't want her roommates to get the wrong idea, even though they're not there. They're at the beach club, apparently, constantly throughout this episode, which we will get to. And then Val and Kenny meet back up at said beach club the next day. She wants to know about his son, but before he can tell her much, around the corner comes Kelly, who knows Kenny and their whole family. She asks how Diane and Michael, his son, are, and Kenny just says they're all back east now. Kenny and his weird, mostly unzipped towel top. Sarah, do you want to comment on what you said about this one?
I don't remember what I said about it. It just looked like a Burt Reynolds stand-in outfit.
If I may, you said stop boring wardrobe from Mo Green. So there you
go. Oh, that was pretty witty of me last night on hour 16 of work. Kenny's whole thing is like, even if you know he's lying and you just want to go to the Bone Zone, go to Bone Zone International Airport and for some stuff. Him?
Yeah. He's really thinning on top too. Like, Val, you could do better and have. But anyway, Kenny introduces Val. She instinctively knows she should say they know each other because of the Peach Pit After Dark. And when Kelly has moved on, Kenny claims that Kelly used to babysit Michael when he was an infant. Like, I'm so sure Kelly ever had any kind of job, including babysitting. There is no way. But anyway, when Val comes out in her swimsuit, she tells Kenny she feels weird being here with him like this. And he responds by giving her a $10,000 check on his personal account, because it's going to take a while for the other money he's arranging to come through. Again, totally normal thing. All financial planners do. Nothing to worry about.
Also, who wrote that check? Girly Dylan? Because what is with the handwriting? Get a male PA to do these things, please.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our A plot. Another bad party ruins everything. Brandon makes it home from his trip to some disasters, including Claire's belly chain with a fucking Laura Ashley looking print skirt and Steve's butt on the kitchen counter where food is prepared. Steve tries to get Brandon to go to a beach club reunion party, but Brandon wants to shower first. And when everyone leaves, a pot boils over and Brandon has to deal with it because he's the only responsible person for miles around, I guess, is what that was supposed to prove. Otherwise, there's no reason for it to have happened.
Nope.
Moving on. Fucking Potsy directed this episode, by the way. Anson Williams, our old friend.
Really?
Yeah. Donna remembers, and they're at this beach club reunion thing. Donna remembers an apocryphal story about David getting his trunks pulled down by a wave. This is the tip of the retcon iceberg, by the way, of this episode.
Yeah, they did not know each other.
No, at all. But when they're done laughing about that thing that never happened, Donna looks up and sees Eddie Cibrian. I mean, Casey Watkins, a real jerk, according to David, but someone that Donna had a huge crush on when she was a kid. David testily tells her she should go talk to him again because guess what? David is still all stressed out about his MZA contract. And as we know, this always brings us David at his best, as we hear in clip 4.
How can you be so insensitive? I've been waiting for this pickup from MZA for a week and you're acting like it's no big deal. If MZA drops my contract, my video career's through.
David, you have no control over it. And I'm sick and tired of talking about it, okay?
Yeah, it's easy for you to say. You're the one who bailed out on the deal, remember?
Listen, David, if you don't want to enjoy yourself today, that's fine with me. You can just sit here and mope.
Yeah, maybe I will.
Good. I think I'm going to have some potato salad. Oh, and if I see Casey, I'll say hello for you.
Donna. Donna.
Yep. Although.
But also, don't even bother with the witty kiss-offs. Just be like, you know what? Lose my number. Forget where I live. Go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. Mope down.
Agree. Also funny to think about this scene in context of what we know about 2017, Eddie Cibrian and Tori Spelling and their various spouse cheating scandals. Moving on. Steve's stupid brothers are back and the non-Spelling one has cut his hair. Thank God. I mean, it still looks bad, but it's better. And they're ogling some girl and being obnoxious about it because it's the only way they know how to be. Steve also thinks that this girl has the hots for the Spelling one, and off Spelling goes with a Steve eyebrow groom. Claire goes to get some smoothies, and when she's gone, we get yet another extremely apocryphal story in clip 5.
You know, I remember a certain summer in particular that was very memorable.
I bet you do.
Oh, I think you know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes, all I had to do was consider the source.
Well, let's see if my memory serves me. About 20 feet from where we're sitting right now, right? The Grunion were running. It's a full moon. And that night, I was lucky enough to have Kelly Taylor in my arms.
You have a good memory.
Some things are unforgettable. It was unforgettable, wasn't it?
What?
What?
You're such a pig.
I know I'm a pig, but other than that, it was unforgettable, wasn't it?
All right, it was unforgettable. Are you happy now?
Yeah, I'm happy, but I didn't mean to upset you. Gosh.
You didn't upset me. I gotta go.
I don't know why we bother anymore. This is about to get worse. So that's just the setup for what we're going to hear more of later.
Yeah.
So like, then I guess, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, it's fine. Just, you know, let's get into the real, like demonstrably, provably untrue.
Yeah.
Bits of the story.
So I guess for all the brand new viewers who are tuning in at season 7, we get a flashback for their spring formal fight about his birthday. And Claire comes back to the table asking where Kelly went. Steve says these reunions bring up bad memories and tries not to answer specifically, but finally says it's about what happened after he and Kelly slept together. Except, whoops, apparently there are a couple of conversations these two still haven't had in clip 6.
What? You slept with Kelly?
Yeah, when we were in high school. You knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
No, come on. Everybody knows Kelly and I slept together.
Well, I guess I missed that.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I thought you knew.
Well, I didn't, okay? And I kind of wish you hadn't told me because now you've ruined my whole weekend.
Claire.
I don't even want to talk to you anymore about it, okay?
Fair.
Yeah,
while you're
but
not talking about it, could you storm over to the writer's room and let them know that Steve and Kelly did not break up at the spring dance, as the flashback implied?
Yeah. Also, from what we, like, was that whole story about when we slept together supposed to be, like, when they slept together for the first time? Because I thought that was when they were at his house and Samantha was getting, like, interviewed downstairs by Entertainment Tonight or something.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Why do we care more about this show than people who work on it? David and some dude named Mark, the new program director at the campus TV station, ask Kelly if they'll both help him enlist Brandon to work at the station this year. Kelly and Mark exchange flirty smiles and concluding with Mark's totally unacceptable 90s guy lip bite as she walks away. Barf, but yes, I made a gif. Moving on. During a beach volleyball game, Casey comes over to ask Donna how they know each other, and she jogs his memory until he remembers that her family had the cabana next to his. And hey, they're both going to be at the dance later. And then Donna looks over and sees David glaring judgmentally at her from somewhere within his enormous t-shirt. So big, you guys. Did the visual aid. So Brandon goes ahead and lets himself in at the hospice where Kelly is volunteering so that he can come and say hello, because what could be more appropriate on Kelly's first day when she's supposed to be helping people who are in the process of dying? Anyway, he finds her scrubbing a bathroom floor, and you know, seeing a woman doing such humble womanly work makes him totally horny. Moving on, looking for Steve, Brandon finds Claire on the beach. She asks if he knew Steve and Kelly slept together, and he's like, dogs know it. He also says it happened when we were in high school, which technically true, except Brandon was in high school in Minneapolis. Claire gets to the heart of the matter when she points out how incestuous the gang is, and Brandon says he tries not to dwell on it. Claire asks if he thinks Steve still has, also how incestuous the gang is from someone who's dated two of the members of it and tried to date a third, that being Brandon himself. So whatever, Claire. But anyway, Claire asks if he thinks Steve still has feelings for Kelly, and he elaborately denies it before saying she knows how Steve feels about her, which is not what she asked him. So Claire marches right over to Steve's poker game to talk about this and makes him look like a cuck to a bunch of dudes we've never seen before. She tells him she wants to leave, but really she wants to know what happened between him and Kelly, why that one night was a big deal, and why it ended. And Steve says it's nothing he's proud of, and Claire's like, I knew it, but Steve just stomps back to the game. And then Ryan is bringing a drink to the girl that he and Austin like, and they flirt over the fact that neither of them has a curfew. They're going to go for a walk later. Hot! Austin comes over when she leaves to go change and tells Ryan to come with him because he's got an idea. Gee, I wonder what it could be. Mark, the campus TV guy, has found Brandon and apparently offered him the job of news director because this motherfucker can't stop failing upward. I mean, honestly, clip 7.
Look, Mark, I don't know anything about television.
Well, here's the thing. That has literally never stopped you from braying at people before. Learn one thing, and then you'll be good, because that's your life, because you're the worst. And second of all, why is the entire world after Brandon? Why?
Yeah. Like, it seems like there's this narrative of, like, how popular Brandon is, but, like, we never see him talk to anyone except the people in the cast for obvious plot reasons, but still, like, whenever he interacts with anyone that hasn't known him since he moved to California, they pretty much hate him, so I don't know where this is coming from either.
And when he was in student government, or on the, you know, task force, everyone hated him then too, except the chancellor, whose lackey he was. So yeah, whatever. Fuck off.
So Mark tries to tantalize Brandon with the investment that the university's put into the station. Kelly shows up in her third outfit of the day to flirt with Mark some more, and he asks her to dance because she is irresistible, just like Brandon. And sure enough, Austin brings Ryan to the back of the women's changing tent, but then someone's mom comes in. Ew. Meanwhile, Donna is having a great time dancing with Casey, which means it's time for David to come over and judge her. Donna says she's having a good time and sarcastically asks if he wants to dance. He doesn't. He wants to lecture her in clip 8.
You know, it was one thing when you wanted out of our business partnership, but now I realize you just wanted to start dating other guys.
I'm not dating him, David. I'm dancing with him. And if you weren't in such a perpetual bad mood, we'd be having a good time.
Yeah, it's always my fault, right? Maybe if you open your eyes, you'd realize I'm having a lousy time and you're not making it any easier.
I'm sorry. But I've tried. You don't want to listen to anything that I have to say.
You know what? I've had it with you. At least now I know who I can count on.
No, wait. Is that really the way that you feel?
Yeah, it is.
Well, then I'm sorry, because you can count on me. You just don't want to say that because you're so angry that I don't want to be your partner anymore.
You just know everything, don't you? You two have a real nice evening.
Okay, so I haven't seen this episode, but I was imagining during the silences, one of those characters was like, sort of like doing a little dance to the surfing music in front of the other one. like they're starting to dance off. Sometimes we amuse ourselves.
Yeah, but I love you guys have a nice day, evening, night. Life is still the fuck off substitute for network television.
Yeah. Also, he is abusive. He hasn't pushed you down the stairs yet, but he will.
Oh, well,
once he can get an arm free from his gigantic shirt.
Yeah, no kidding. I seriously have no idea what time it is because it's still fully light out as Brandon is boring Kelly about his visit to Hadley City. So Kelly came to the party, left to work a full shift at the hospice, and then came back before it's anywhere close to sundown. I don't get it. Anyway, she credits him for changing Mariah's life in clip 9.
Brandon, you've changed a lot of people's lives.
Way to go,
That's
Brandon.
That's true. Mine is demonstrably worse, thanks to you.
Well.
David!
Kelly says hers is among the lives he's changed, although she also doesn't say whether it was for the better or worse. Brandon magnanimously tells her she's doing fine on her own. Steve wanders over just as Brandon has changed the subject to the fight Steve is currently having with Claire. Kelly tells him she doesn't know why Steve would tell Claire anything and hurt her feelings. Steve thought she knew and is offended that Kelly thinks that he would hurt Claire's feelings intentionally. And then one more crawl forward with the retcon, clip 10.
You know, guys, I was just getting to know you two crazy kids back when all this went on. Maybe you'd like to share your pain with your Uncle Brandon, huh?
No, I don't want to share.
All what? They broke up before you moved to the state.
Yeah. And it was in like the first 10 minutes of the pilot was them being dicks to each other because they had already broken up the prior year. And as far as we knew, like, they were sophomores at best.
Right.
When all this happened.
In fact.
Get over it. No one cares. But of course, we have to, like, retroactively cleanse Kelly's reputation of any hint that she might have enjoyed sex outside of a loving romantic relationship. Like, Christ.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever happened, though, we're supposed to think was within the span of the series run, but didn't happen on camera? I guess this will get spelled out, but it's still so infuriating. Anyway, Kelly leaves to talk to Claire since she doesn't want Claire to be mad at her. And after Kelly's gone, Brandon finally gets Steve to talk. Something happened after they broke up and he never told anybody, not even Kelly, but we still don't get to hear what it was yet. And then the brothers are busting into another tent. This time their dream girl is the one in it, but they're too eager and fall through the tent parting, which is a metaphor for something. I just can't think what exactly. This girl, whose name is Beth, is horrified and kicks them out. She thought Ryan was different. I don't know why. And later, it's finally dark as Donna sits with Casey at the party, and David glares at her, and his expression is easily as hateful as any we ever saw on Ray. But somehow, I feel like we are supposed to be on David's side, kind of?
I guess.
I mean... Yeah,
feel like this is all just a big misunderstanding and it's too bad these crazy kids can't work it out. Like, it isn't.
No.
And also, not to always come back to this, but like, they're not boning. Just walk right off.
Yeah. So he rouses himself, gathers his gigantic sweatshirt and goes over to say hi. Just kidding. To be a complete bitch in clip 11.
How's it going, Casey?
Silver. It's been a long time.
Yeah, not long enough.
David, you're gonna be rude. Please leave.
Oh, what? Now you're telling me where I can sit?
No, she's asking you politely to leave us alone. And if that doesn't seem to work, I'm telling you.
Huh. That was real convincing.
You know what? Let's go, okay? You know what, David? If you're trying to ruin my evening, you're doing a really good job.
I'm not trying to ruin anything. I can't stand seeing you with this goofball.
Leave me alone. You said you couldn't count on me, so don't.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't say anything you can't take back. Goofball.
More airport stuff for you, David.
Oh, boy. Steve has to break up a verbal slap fight between Ryan and Austin and take them aside to tell them spying on a scantily clad girl is bad. Claire appears just in time to hear Steve preaching the gospel of respecting women. And when the boys have wandered off, Claire comes up to say that she talked to Kelly, and whatever Kelly and Steve are going through, it's bringing out the best in Steve, is it? And now she's all chirpy and ready to go, but he can't leave yet because of old business, and she's okay with it and kisses him. So Steve finally finds Kelly as the party is breaking up, and finally shit comes out. So after the spring dance in what was already retconned previously to 10th grade as opposed to their junior year, which is what it was when it started, clip 12.
I was the queen of the dance. How could I forget?
Yeah.
Of course.
Remember, I got drunk and we got into a fight.
Yes. But to be honest with you, I don't have the faintest idea what we were fighting over.
God, you know that night we made love at the beach club was my first time.
Ugh. I didn't know that. I thought you were Mr. Experience.
Yeah. I wanted everybody to think that.
I wish you would have told me.
I wish I would have told you too. In fact, there's a lot of things I would have done differently.
Like what?
Well, when we did it, it was a big thing for me. But it really didn't seem like a big thing for you.
Well, I was a lot different then, too.
Yeah. But I did something afterwards. I did something bad, Kelly. To you.
What is this all about? You can tell me. It's okay.
Okay. After you broke up with me, Kelly, I started spreading rumors about you.
What are you talking about?
I told anyone that would listen that you were a slut and that you'd sleep with anybody. It was me, Kelly. I was the one who spread all those rumors about you. And I'm to blame for the horrible reputation you had at West Beverly all those years.
How could you do that? I thought we were friends.
No, it's just once the ball got rolling, I couldn't stop it. I'm sorry.
You bastard. Do you know how long I had to live with that? Do you know how long that followed me? Yeah, the worst part is, I became that girl. I became the slut that everybody thought I was, and I am still getting over it.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, well, sorry does not make up for what you put me through.
No. No, this is not what happened.
No, it's not. She was always, like, boy crazy, which was fine.
Yes.
So was Donna. Donna was like a big drinker and had parties when her parents were away. Whatever. We'll leave some shit from season one in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I love how also now, and not that I blame Kelly for the whole Dylan-Brenda thing, because that's on Dylan. But she spent a lot of time brooding about how that contributed to her rep.
Yeah.
Also, like, mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that because people said that you were slutty, that you became that person and that's Steve's fault? Like, this is not how human relationships work.
Yeah.
And also, it's Kelly, and if I'm supposed to feel sorry for her, I don't. Fuck her.
Yeah. Also, isn't it established in the slumber party specifically that the guy who raped her, who was the senior on the football team, was the one who spread the rumor about her in the first place, like pre-Steve?
Uh-huh. Okay. Ross or Russ.
Whatever.
Yep.
Steve cries a single tear. Moving on. The next day, Brandon is trying to cheer Steve up, and Steve's outfit is the exact opposite of contrite. His hibiscus shorts, which Sarah clipped from the visual aids. He's horrified by the thought that Kelly might never forgive him and has no interest in going to the beach club, even though his shorts, but Claire is expecting him. I don't know why Claire would give a shit if he goes. Have we ever even seen her there before this episode? Anyway, Steve leaves, giving Val and Brandon privacy so that she can shit talk Kelly in clip 13.
If he hadn't spread those rumors about Kelly, somebody would have.
Ooh.
Again, we're supposed to hate Val for that comment, but she could come sit next to me.
And she's right. So if Steve didn't spread those rumors about Kelly, which he didn't, someone else would have, slash did.
And did, yes.
And then Brandon gets to scold her for badmouthing Kelly, which she did behind her back, so who even gives a shit? It's called living in the world. Moving on. When he gets out of the water, where I'm sure he was swimming very remorsefully, Steve mournfully tries to get Kelly to be his partner in an upcoming egg toss. She is not interested. And David comes over to apologize to Donna. She asks if he wants to come in, not really seeming like she wants him to, but he declines and then shifts into the apology phase, excusing his awful behavior by saying he's been stressed, as if she didn't know that. He's going to try really hard not to take it out on her. And she's like, thanks, I appreciate that, instead of I fucking hope so. And he says maybe they can hang out at the beach club later. And she's like, maybe. And he says they tried, but it just didn't work out. Again, she agrees, but they're still friends. Seems like a pretty shitty deal for Donna, but whatever, they hug on it. And then Kelly is walking.
Yeah, also, if that's what trying really hard not to take it out on her looks like, what if he weren't trying? She'd be dead now.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, I think he means going forward, but still, like, no, you do not know how to modulate your behavior. Then Kelly is walking alone and also having a flashback to the spring dance, except it's to the part where Steve apologized and said he still loved her. And then Steve is catching up with her in real time to apologize again some more. She remembers that they said they loved each other that night. And because I know you were concerned, let me assure you that Kelly and Steve do partner up for the egg toss after all, but they do not win. Kelly and Brandon agree that it was good for them to have time alone over the summer. Kelly wonders if they'll ever be on the same page, which ends up being about them fucking getting back together eventually, which please don't, except the one thing I remember is that they do. Blech, and that's the episode.
Barf.
MVP.
I got no one.
Beth for telling off the monkey boys?
Sure.
Okay.
Because everyone else is like, oh, except you took that. Like, I would say Val, but it's like, eh. Like, you're all, like, getting a lady boner for many bannermen and accepting his shitty lies and probably stolen money. And
yeah.
So, yeah, there's no real M's. Except Beth and her not all that 90s choker and... Hopefully she wasn't too scarred by that experience.
Yes. Least valuable player. Well, we're really spoiled for choice, but I'm going to say the writers for coming up with this completely alternate storyline that never happened.
Fucking same. It's the summertime. Get an intern to pull you some fucking tape and figure out what happened. It wasn't that long ago.
It really wasn't. And now a user challenge. This comes from KClark95 on Twitter. 5 ways the show tried to convince us Tori Spelling was irresistible. Not really that applicable to this episode, but let's try just generally speaking. Sarah, go first.
The Rose Queen debacle.
Oh, God. Yes.
Whenever that was.
Yeah. Eric trying to hit on her, too.
I have one.
Dave has one.
The sensual... inflatable man dance.
Oh, from the Strike the Match video?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The pleather
car dealer.
As seen in Rectify. Yeah. Eddie Cibrian thinking that she's cute, I guess.
Oh, her modeling career in Paris. How quickly we forget. Modeling / sexual harassment victim career in Paris.
Oh, God.
And that makes five. Right.
Sure does. Next time on Again With This, St. Kelly struggles with her volunteer work, Brandon struggles with Joan's handful of a daughter, and the writers struggle, again, to remember that we already had a heller with the hots for Brandon, or a high school heller with the hots for Brandon, and also with gestational arithmetic, because of course Joan goes into labor before her and Ned's wedding, and, oh wait, olds, who cares? You'll feel like you've aged significantly after peeping our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm perpetual bad mood Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I'm here with my co-host, No Strings Check, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Our producer is the young and stupid David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.